Hello, lovely listeners. Welcome back around the virtual campfire for this next short episode in the short series, My Heathenry. So we have got a very special guest joining us today around the virtual campfire. We'd like to introduce to you Dan Coulthas, who is the author of God's Own County Heathen Prayer Book. He's also the current chair of the Defence Pagan Network, the Community Support Officer for the Pagan Federation, General Secretary for ASATRU UK, and the current chair of Pagan Aid. Dan, welcome. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Hello there.
Hello.
Did I get everything right to start with?
Yeah. I think that's... That's most of the hats on the hat rack.
Wow. Okay.
I was going for the lots of strings to the bow. Yeah,
we can go with that. Strings to bow, hats to hat rack.
As long as we haven't got like hats on strings, then we're probably okay.
Yeah, that might get a bit confusing.
So you've come to join us today to maybe talk a little bit about your heathenry and how your faith is for you. So just as an opening question, in your spirituality, what kinds of things are important to you?
Quite a few things, really. I think it's quite a, you know, heathenry for me is a fairly fairly all-encompassing sort of belief system and way of doing things. I think family and community are sort of very much at the core of my beliefs, and I'd say looking after the planet and that sort of environmental side of things as well is really important.
Are there things, how you sort of approach your faith, does that blend into your everyday life? Are there practices that you find yourself doing every day?
I mean, not so much in every day in terms of sort of a formal ritual or anything like that, but just little things, you know, here and there, everything, you know, thanking the whites and spirits of nature around me, little things like, you know, thanking the house spirits if I'm brewing or baking or cooking or anything like that, incorporating ancestor veneration into sort of any major decisions that I make or anything like that. So yeah, really sort of, in some areas it has a big obvious influence, and then in other areas it becomes almost subconscious, but it's very much still there, and it sort of helps me, guides me, and helps with my decision making, and helps me sort of build up a more positive relationship with my surroundings, really. I think being aware of the other beings that you share your space with, be that actual, you know, animals and plants and stuff that we can see, or if it's spirits or ancestors or even deities, just having that constant awareness. Because for me personally, you know, heathenry isn't something that, you know, you just do a ritual at a moot and, you know, wear a t-shirt that says Hail Thor every now and again and that's it. It's not suggesting that that's what it is for anybody else, but if it is, then that's fine too. But for me, you know, it is always there. It's a constant comfort, but it's also a constant reminder of sort of my responsibilities, and that, you know, consequences do have actions. No, actions have consequences. I suppose yeah, the reverse is also true. Yeah, you know, that everything that you do plays into something bigger. That we're not alone, I'm not alone. You know, it can be very much a positive supporting thing, as well as I need to look after the other sort of energies and spirits around me as well.
And thinking about sort of some of those roles that we mentioned just at the beginning, how that comes through your life and those connections that you're talking about there, where you're sort of connected to other people and not necessarily responsible for them, but responsible for part of that relationship with community and that connection with others.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, some of them, you know, I can definitely relate to, you know, being directly linked to different aspects. So Community Support Officer of the Pagan Federation is obviously very community focused, as the name suggests.
And that's very much about connecting with the community. And it's not just the heathen community, obviously, it's the wider pagan community with that. But recently become involved with AUK. I've been on the committee there for, I say recently, about 8-9 months now. And again, that's obviously very community focused. And sort of within heathenry, I'm very much of the belief that, you know, we shouldn't hoard information, we should share knowledge. And I really don't like intellectual elitism or anything like that. I think that, you know, we're all learning, even the All Fathers still learning. And I think that we can't know everything. And different people learn in different ways and stuff like that. So I think what is important is when you gain knowledge and understanding is to share that and offer that to other people. And I'm very keen on the side of what AUK does, where we're doing that. Because, as I say, even the All Father is still learning. So what chance has we got to know everything? But, you know, if we work together, then we'll understand a little bit more. Obviously, that's not my direct role within AUK, but it's my favourite part of what AUK does, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I always sort of think about the phrase knowledge is power that everybody always quotes. And it's like, if knowledge is shared, then it empowers everyone.
Exactly, yeah.
Whereas trying to keep it, as you say, trying to keep it just for yourself in order to make you more powerful than other people is, you know, that's not the way I would want to go. So, yeah.
I can see that.
So thinking about your own faith practice and how that developed since you first began to follow this path and then kind of discovering community and connection and that sharing of knowledge, how do you feel your own faith practice has developed since you first came to it?
So when it first started out many moons ago, so I came to heathenry. It was a slightly different path to most people, I think, because I was living in Germany at the time, and we used to go on family holidays to Scandinavia. And obviously, as part of that, you know, there's quite a lot of sort of Viking villages and museums and stuff that we were going to when we were there. It just sort of started sort of speaking to me. I remember, because out in Scandinavia, you can stop and wild camp anywhere for 24 hours and then move on. So we were doing that quite a lot. So very much sort of immersed in nature, you know, camping by, you know, in the forest by lakes of glacier melt. And it was all very lovely. And it was Frey that initially sort of called to me, or stood out to me at least. And yeah, so that was sort of how it all started. I'm not sure if it's because I was in Sweden that Frey was having more of an impact or quite what. And then over the next sort of couple of years, my entire immediate family just sort of all independently decided they were heathen. We didn't discuss it, it just sort of happened. So my parents, my brother and sister, myself and my then girlfriend, now wife, we all just sort of, yeah, over the course of 2 or 3 years, yeah, so we all sort of became heathen. So I was quite lucky in that I immediately had a small community of heathens because it was my family. You know, I immediately had people I could do ritual with and talk about heathen stuff, which, you know, I was really, really lucky to have that. Obviously, on the flip side, at that point, we were all very new to it. So there wasn't anyone particularly knowledgeable in that, you know, we were sort of picking up bits of information where we could. Back then, good books were harder to come across. It grew slowly, I guess, you know, from to start with, it was just, yeah, these gods seem to, you know, make sense, and I'll wear a Thor's hammer, and, you know, and that was about the extent of it. And then as the years went by, got more and more involved, read more. Our first actual physical event that we attended with other heathens outside of the family was actually the first Asgardian festival. And that was fantastic. You know, we everyone's apprehensive when they go to their first thing like that, whether it's a moot or a festival. And obviously the Asgardian was the first of its kind, really, in this country. So, yeah, we were a bit apprehensive going, but as soon as we got there, we, you know, just settled right in, met some wonderful people, and never looked back, really. We founded Heavens of Yorkshire about 6 months after that festival, I think, and that's gone from strength to strength. So, yeah, the community aspect has built more and more. You know, met some fantastic people that, you know, several of whom now I consider to be as close as family. And, you know, we've got a great sort of network of people all across the country and across the world. It was interesting, actually, one of the people that had the biggest influence on me at that first Asgardian festival was Frigga Asraf, who I was absolutely in awe of. She led a ancestor sort of pathworking workshop, which was just so incredibly powerful. And, you know, now all these years down the line, I actually work really closely with her. We collaborate on a lot of stuff, sort of Flame of Frith and things like that. So it's funny, really, how these things all work out. So, yeah, I'd say a brief summary of a very long answer there. it's just sort of deepened and strengthened sort of through the years, and sort of big to the point now where, sort of, as I was saying earlier, that it sort of encompasses every aspect of my life in a greater or lesser way.
So you were talking there right at the beginning on those family holidays to Scandinavia, that it was Frey who resonated with you first, the very first one of the gods that kind of enabled you to then connect deeper into the faith as it is now and help you on that path. Do you have now maybe one or two of the gods that you most resonate with?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, I honour all the deities, but Frey has stayed certainly the foremost. He's, yeah, certainly my main land-based deity. Yeah, so, you know, for me, Frey is sort of first, you know, in my, well, one of the two that's sort of up the front there in my practice. Always has been. As I say, I don't know if it was because I first sort of really properly discovered heathenry in Sweden and the sort of connection that Frey has with that area. There's a lot of aspects of him that really resonate with me. So, you know, the fact that he's prepared to sacrifice, well, ultimately his life to woo the woman he loves. Admittedly, some of his tactics are slightly questionable, but
maybe a little bit.
With the willing to sacrifice side, and yeah, we'll gloss over the coercion side, which obviously I don't approve of. But you know, so there's that. There's the connection with the land, the working closely with like the cycles of the earth, and being connected with that and understanding that, so that, you know, we can be a positive influence on it. You know, those are all sort of aspects of Frey that really speak to me. That's one. And then Ran is the other one. I've always been a sea person. I think I could swim before I could walk. And obviously spent a large part of my career at sea. I always feel at home when I'm on or near the sea. The longest I've lived in one place was 10 years when I was out in Germany. So I've never really had somewhere where I can say, you know, this place is home. And it doesn't matter where in the world I am, if I can see the sea, then I still feel that. Ran for me she's the deep ocean. And yeah, you know, a goddess that is, I think, often misunderstood. She's sort of seen as this sort of evil sailor stealing person. But actually, from the sources that we've got and from my own sort of personal experience, I think you know, she's the hostess of those that are lost at sea, rather than I'd much prefer to focus on that side. Yes, the sea, you know, the sea does take people, and as she is the embodiment of the sea, you know, it's the sea is the giver and taker of life in much the same way. But with Ran, you know, she's well, I mean, the gods go to her hall to feast, so she must be pretty good at hosting. So, you know, of all the possible places to end up when we do go, it probably isn't the worst. And I, you know, I feel personally that I'm one of the lucky few heathens who has regularly been to her hall and returned to tell the tale, which is a fairly unique experience. But she's looked after me through all of that. You know, I've had some pretty scary times at sea. There has been times where, you know, I thought that was it and I would be staying with her that time. But she's looked after me and she's got me through. So whatever I do in the future, is if I end up in a more land-based sort of pattern of life, the sea will always be home to me, I think.
And I know your most recent book is Heathenry and the Sea.
Yeah. nice segue into a shameless right. plug. Heathenry and the Sea is very different to any of the other books that I've done, in that it's a more sort of academic book rather than a prayer book or a children's book or other things that I've done. It's sort of an exploration of the human relationship with the sea from a heathen perspective. There's a little bit of everything in there. There's obviously descriptions of Ran, her husband, Aegir, Njord. There's also quite a lot on Thor's connection with the sea, which is one that doesn't get thought of quite as much as sort of Ran, Aegir, and Njord, but actually Thor has quite a big bearing on the sea and quite a strong relationship with it in various forms. It's got a bit about seafaring ancestors. It's got stuff about the sort of linguistics of the sea. Lots of folklore, which I really, really enjoyed researching. Because there are so many different sort of water spirits. And some of the ones I've written about are sort of, you know, they're mentioned in heathen sources. Others are from later folklore. So I suppose to sort of some purist academics would argue that, well, that's not really heathenry. But to me, they're all water spirits. You know, we use the term water white. We don't specify that only water whites that Egil Skallagrimson encountered, you know. That sort of comes to a really important point for me as well, is that, you know, heathenry is a living religion. The gods are alive now, and the water whites that surround us are there now. So what's the harm in drawing on sort of folklore sources? Because it's that sort of folk knowledge, of direct knowledge of the water spirits around us, rather than relying on a dusty old book. Not that I'm against dusty old books. I love dusty old books, but you know, I think that, especially given that there's, you know, there is a shortage in heathenry of, you know, original sources, we have to look for inspiration and truth wherever we can find it. And yeah, certainly when it comes to the water spirits and water whites, I've written about specifically Scandinavian ones, specifically British Isles based ones generally, because that sort of fits more with the heathen mantra of the book. But you know, in the same section on sea monsters, I've written about Jormungandr, obviously heathen, and also mm-hmm. the Kraken. So which the thing I love about the Kraken is it's effectively real, because we have now, you know, scientists have found squids that size. So, all right, they don't you know, take down ships in one big gulp. You know, they are there. There are some fantastic water spirits out there as well, especially in the Icelandic stuff. Very lucky to have Alda Björk Ólafsdóttir wrote a section for the book on Icelandic water spirits, and there's some they're generally quite nasty. You wouldn't want to meet most of those, and I can't pronounce the Icelandic names of them, so I won't even try. But there's also a rat whale, which is particularly nasty.
Sort of a rat whale?
Yeah, half rat, half whale, that just sort of pops up and eats your ship.
So, okay.
Yeah, so as I say, it was fantastic. You know, certainly for that section of the book, you know, I was learning so much as I wrote it. And so I hope that, yeah, if people read it, they'll find it as interesting as I did writing it. Yeah, it was a book that I wrote for myself, really, because it was the book that I wanted to exist and it didn't. I know that's a cliche, but yeah, it was the book that I wish I'd had. Yeah, you know, if other people enjoy it, then fantastic.
Well, I think I'm going to be having a look at that. I don't have anything like the connection to the sea that you obviously do, but I do love it, and I do. I am always particularly interested in sea and lake and river related spirits and things. So I am definitely going to be looking at that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, especially for people living in the British Isles, you know, you're never that far away from the sea. And most people will have a relative or an ancestor who was a seafarer, or, you know, they live on the coast, or they, you know, fish for a living, or there's connections there. And, you know, of course, most of our planet is covered in water and most of our bodies are made of water. So, you know, you don't have to be a sailor to have a spiritual connection with the sea. I think there's certainly, to a lesser or greater extent, I think, you know, everyone does, really.
So maybe for our last question, our last topic for this short episode is, do you have a favourite story from the myth cycle? And maybe could you tell us a little bit about why that one is your favourite one?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this, and it's difficult because there are so many good stories. A couple that jump to mind, I mean, again, with the sort of sea connection, there's Thor's fishing trip, which is a particular favourite. But actually, I think from a spiritual point of view, and it's probably... sounds a little bit left field, but Lokasenna, purely for the reason, not so much for what happens to Loki at the end of it, which is unfortunate for him, but it's the fact that it demonstrates that all of our deities are fallible. They all obviously have great strengths, but Lokasenna points out that, you know, they're not perfect. And for me, that's a really important part of my beliefs, is the fact that, because our deities aren't perfect, they are much more believable and much more relatable. You know, Odin does some very questionable things, as do, you know, well, all the deities that Loki points out in the poem. And I say, for me, I see that as a strength of our pantheon rather than a weakness. The fact that they have weaknesses is a strength. Which I know is obviously not entirely logical, but it makes sense in my head. I'm much more able to connect with deities and believe in deities that, you know, they have their own flaws, they have their own agendas, they have their own things that they're working for. It just helps me understand the world better. If all our gods were perfect, why do bad things happen? Whereas we know that our gods aren't perfect. So that means that obviously bad things are going to happen. And I suppose there is a little bit of nautical stuff at the end. Loki turns himself into a salmon. So, yeah.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much for coming and talking with us today. Lovely listeners around the virtual campfire, I'd like to thank you very much for coming in and sharing this time with us as well. Dan, thank you for sharing what your understanding of your heathenry is and what things are very personal and very important to you as well. Thank you very much for sharing some of those with us today.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for having me. I hope I didn't ramble too much.
No, you did.
Yeah, thanks everyone for listening as well.
Yeah, so lovely listeners, we will see you for our next short episode in the series My Heathenry. We hope you will join us then.